This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 24th of August, 2009, and today I'm honored to be joined by Anthony Coughlin, Senior Lecturer Emeritus at Trinity College Dublin and Secretary of the National Platform EU Research and Information Centre at nationalplatform.org. Professor Coughlin, thank you very much for joining me today on the program.
Hello, glad to be with you.
Well, Mr. Coughlin, you have long been a campaigner on behalf of Irish sovereignty in the case of an increasingly federalist European Union, and you've been called the intellectual backbone for the alternative position on the European Union. Tell us about how and when you first became interested in the issue of Ireland's position in the European Union and why this is such an important issue.
Well, years ago, I read the memoirs of the famous Jean Monnet, who had a key role in establishing the original European community way back 50 years ago. And it was clear for me from that the continental EU powers, particularly Germany, France, and Benelux, wanted to push Europe, or Western Europe at that time, towards some kind of federation under the political hegemony of Germany and France, or France and Germany. And I really was against that from the beginning on democratic grounds. I'm in favor of European free trade and economic cooperation, of course. But the attempt to establish some kind of European superpower under Franco-German hegemony or leadership to contest world politics with America and China and Russia and Japan and so on seems to be quite wrong-headed, and certainly not something which a small country with a long and honorable tradition of democracy and independence like Ireland should commit itself to. And that's what's involved in these European referendums, and it's particularly involved in the second Lisbon referendum that's coming up here in a few weeks' time.
Well, as you say, the issue before the Irish people at the moment, and the one that's currently preoccupying those of all political stripes, is, of course, the Treaty of Lisbon. Now, you have written or compiled some key explanatory documents about this treaty and what it will do, and those documents are currently hosted on CorbettReport.com and can also be accessed from nationalplatform.org. But for the benefit of listeners who have not read widely on this issue, can you, in summation, explain the significance of this treaty and why you're opposed to it?
Well, the Lisbon Treaty is a revamped version of the Constitution for Europe, which was drafted about 4 years ago and which was rejected in referendums by the French and Dutch peoples in 2005. Now, when that treaty was rejected, the EU prime ministers and presidents who were pushing this thing, and particularly the French and German ones and the Benelux countries, they revamped the Constitution and presented it in the form of the Treaty of Lisbon. And this treaty, in a sense, essentially gives the 27 member states of the European Union, and now including many East European and Central European countries, the constitutional form of a federation, rather like the United States of America, in fact, except that, of course, the United States of America is a democracy with one people speaking one language, more or less. But in Europe, you have many different peoples, many different cultures, many different languages, and there is no European people as such. So what the European, the Lisbon Treaty does is to turn the EU into a kind of state with its own constitution, which is superior, would be superior in all the areas covered by the treaties to the constitutions of the member states. It would confer an additional citizenship of the European Union on the citizens of the 27 member states, and the rights and duties attaching to that citizenship would be superior to the rights and duties attaching to their national citizenships. So in a sense, that's a classic federal constitution where, you know, you're a citizen of two levels of government, the federal level in Brussels and the local level in Germany, France, Ireland, Britain, or whatever. And then that's on the constitutional side the most important thing which Lisbon would do. It would establish a kind of European federation, which would, in effect, have all the powers of a state, or virtually all the powers of a traditional state, and this new EU federation would then sign treaties with other states in all areas of its powers, and would have its own voice in the United Nations, and its own foreign minister, and its own diplomatic service, and so on. And then the second major thing which the Lisbon Treaty would do is that it would change the mode of making European laws quite significantly by giving much more power to the big states. At present, the big states have something like four times the number of votes which Ireland has in making EU laws. Germany, France, Britain, and Italy have 29 votes each, and we have seven. So they have four times ours. But if Lisbon goes through, the whole thing is put on a population basis, and Germany, with its 80 million people, have 20 times Ireland's vote. We have only 4 million. Britain, France, and Italy, with their average 60 million people each, would have 15 times Ireland's vote. And our actual voting weight, compared to the others, would fall from its current 2% of the total votes to less than 1%. So in effect, this would be a kind of power grab by the big European states to have political control of this new supranational European Union. And it would do many other things, but those are the two most important things it would do. And it would it raises, of course, fundamental questions of democracy, independence, the ability of countries to have a say in their own laws, and so on. Because, of course, I don't know if your listeners appreciate, but in the 27 countries of the European Union at present, half or more of the laws each year now come from the European institutions in Brussels, and only half come from their own national parliaments and the citizens who elect those parliaments. So there's a fundamental problem of democracy involved.
So we see that the European Union is already gradually assuming more and more powers. And in effect, what you're saying is that if people vote yes to the Lisbon Treaty, then they will, in effect, be voting away their own national sovereignty.
Yes, indeed. And the remarkable thing is that that Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, is the only one of the 27 EU countries that's allowed to have a referendum on it. In the original EU constitution, we started this whole process off. I mentioned that the French and Dutch had referendums and they turned down the constitution. And then the President Sarkozy of France said, oh, we can't put this to referendums again because it will be rejected in other countries. So the heads of state and government agreed among themselves on no account to have referendums. So they ratified this treaty by majority vote in the national parliaments, and there's where people are much more inclined to go along with this than among the citizens. But they can't deny a referendum in the Republic of Ireland because of the character of our constitution and the fact that there was a particular court case 20 years ago, the Crotty case, which I was myself partly responsible for, may I say, whereby, as a result of which the Irish Supreme Court laid down that any surrender of sovereignty by the Irish state to the European institutions must be done by the people who possess sovereignty, which is the Irish people. And that's why the Irish people have to be asked. Well, we in fact did have this referendum last year. We had a referendum on the Lisbon Treaty. We rejected it by 54 votes to 47, by a majority of 6 or 7%, and exactly the same Lisbon treaty is now being presented to us again in order to get a different result, because the result was last time around was not regarded as the right result by the powers that be in Europe and by some of our own political elites.
Well, that's right, but the yes side is now proclaiming that they have won certain concessions about the treaty that guarantee Ireland's national sovereignty. What can you say about that new proclamation?
Well, this claim is quite spurious. Not a dot or comma of the treaty has been changed. Nothing has been changed in the treaty, because if it had been, in order to take Ireland's concerns into account, it would be a new treaty in effect, and would have to go around for ratification by all 26 states again. So what the Irish government and the other prime ministers and presidents have said is that we understand that the treaty is to be mean such and such in certain areas, which were quite sensitive last time around and were much discussed last time around, but this doesn't actually change the treaty. The treaty means exactly the same. Indeed, what the Prime Minister and President said is that their statement clarifies but does not change either the content or the application of the Treaty of Lisbon. So exactly the same treaty is being put forward as last time round. Any interpretation supposed to be put upon it by the current lot of Prime Ministers and Presidents would have no bearing whatever on the judgments of the European Court of Justice in years and decades to come, which is the only body competent under the treaties to interpret them, because these European treaties are interpreted by the European Supreme Court, which is in effect the EU Court of Justice. And so this is just a political statement that all your concerns have been taken into account. We think that your concerns last year, some of them were mistaken or irrelevant, and therefore have another go at voting on the treaty, which is exactly the same treaty. Otherwise, it would have to go around for ratification all over the place again.
Well, then how are people in Ireland reacting to this? There's obviously a huge effort underway to promote the yes position, but to what extent do you think the people are buying into the propaganda, and to what extent are people taking umbrage at being asked essentially to vote on the treaty again until they get it right?
Well, it's hard to get, it's a little hard to say, although we're only 5 weeks away from the referendum, which occurs on Friday, 5 weeks. People are very much more concerned at the moment with the dire economic crisis which the Republic of Ireland is in, and the particular position vis-a-vis our banks. So there's a major bill relating to a bad bank scheme which the government is pushing and which the opposition is opposing being brought into the Irish Parliament in the next 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. And people are very much concerned about that. There is a lot of resentment about people being asked to vote on the same thing again, and that the government said, oh no, it's not the same thing, we've got guarantees, but as I said, the guarantees don't actually change a jot or the title of the treaty, and they won't be binding European Union law, so there's a conflict of perceptions there and contentions. And of course, the vastly more money has been spent on the yes side than on the no, and the European Commission itself, which has no function in relation to the ratification of new European treaties, is weighing in quite improper fashion by putting advertisements in the newspapers, you know, implicitly urging a yes vote, even though, and of course, the Commission, which is the body that administers the European Union, is kind of civil service and also has the power to the monopoly of proposing all laws under the peculiar constitution, which is the EU. The Commission would, of course, gain a lot more powers if the Lisbon Treaty went through, because many more competences, some 30 areas of lawmaking, would be shifted from the national state to the European level. And so the Commission, of course, will get more powers to make more laws and to administer more things, and therefore it's putting a lot of money into this. And, of course, the French and German governments are very much concerned that this will go through, because it will give them a lot more power. It doubles Germany's voting weight, as I said earlier on, in making EU laws, and increases France's from the current 8% to 12%, and it halves ours from 2% to less than 1%. So you can see how the big states want to push this through, and key elements of the political elite in Ireland, who more and more align themselves with this project and who are much less concerned with defending Irish democracy and defending the rights of the Irish Parliament and the Irish people who elect that Parliament, they also go along with it. So there's a great disparity between the forces. On the other hand, the Irish public is in a peculiar mood, is very angry about the way in which the government has mishandled the economic crisis and the bank crisis in particular. So there's a kind of contention in the Irish public mind with anger on the one hand and fear on the other, fear that if they don't vote for Lisbon, they'll be in the doghouse, so to speak, or isolated. And yet this is really irrational, because if Ireland doesn't ratify the Lisbon Treaty, and it must be ratified by all 27 European Union states in order to come into force for any of them, if Ireland doesn't ratify, of course the Poles and the Germans haven't ratified either, and they won't ratify. Even Germany hasn't yet ratified, because there's been constitutional questions in Germany, in the German Constitutional Court, and that might still be the case when we vote in 5 weeks' time. And of course, everyone knows that there'll be a new British government by next May, because the Gordon Brown Labour government has to leave office, and everyone knows as well that almost certainly the Conservatives will come back into office. And they are pledged to hold a referendum in the United Kingdom and recommend a no vote in the Treaty of Lisbon if, when they come into office, they find the treaty still unratified. On the other hand, if we change our vote, of course, it's likely to be ratified before that happens. So there's a kind of race in time between the change of government in Britain, which must occur by next May at the latest, and the ratification of the Treaty of Lisbon, which the Germans, the French, and the big states of Europe, and the Brussels Commission, and sections of the Irish elite want to push through. So that's the current state of play. And the yeses, as they were last time round, last year, when this Lisbon referendum was previously put, are ahead at the moment. But the gap is narrowing, and as happened last time, it may well narrow, and you know, it's possible for the no sides to win. I mean, it would be a battle of David and Goliath, and one can't be sure, of course, but it certainly is likely to be an exciting contest, and there's likely to be huge international interest in it, because of course we are the only people in Europe who are allowed to vote on this treaty, and yet 500 million Europeans, so the citizens of the 27 member states, certainly don't want to be put under a federalist constitution by their masters of their betters without being asked whether they want that or not. And this is the whole point of the lack of democracy, that they could be given no opportunity to have a say, because as President Sarkozy of France said, if we had a referendum in other countries, they would vote no also, and opinion polls show that. So that's the situation. It's a real assault on democracy in the European continent.
Well, that is exactly the point. I think it speaks volumes that only the people of Ireland are being given a chance to voice their democratic vote on this issue. So for those listeners who are concerned about this issue and would like to know more about it, tell us about nationalplatform.org and the information you've assembled there.
Well, we're essentially a research information centre, quite small in number. We've got a number of lawyers and economists and so on. I've had a long interest as a political scientist in the European project, and we seek to ensure that the information we produce is legally accurate, and we provide it to whoever is interested in it, whether on the political left, right, or centre, because, of course, in democratic issues like this, of this kind, you get people of a very wide background, some on the right, some on the left, some on the center of politics, who want to have a say. And so we provide this information, and we have this, as I said, we've got a website, and there are, of course, quite a number of websites available, but we try and ensure that the information is legally accurate on the treaty. And people can make up their own minds about it. But I personally no doubt that if people understood and understand what's in this treaty, it's so undemocratic, you know, handing over lawmaking powers to institutions that are not elected. The 27 commissioners of the monopoly proposing all EU laws, nobody elects them. Then the laws are made on the basis of the big states having a huge number of votes more than the small states. And the European Court of Justice continually makes judgments which push the boundaries of European competence wider and wider. So we provide and seek to provide information, and anyone who's anxious, who's likely to find out more about it, are very welcome to look up the website at nationalplatform.org, and I hope that they'll find points there that are interesting to them in this very important moment in European history, because whatever happens on Friday, October the 2nd, next 5 weeks, next Friday, it's going to be a decisive moment in modern European history. Will Europe divide? Will this attempt to push it towards a federation be succeed? Of course, if it does succeed, I'm sure there'll be huge reactions against it down the road when people discover they've lost their democracy and have very little say in anything. Or will Spanner be put in this Franco-German project, pushed also by the Brussels Commission, and the way be opened up to a new and better treaty for both Ireland and for the European Union as a whole, which would be more democratic, which would repatriate power from the EU institutions back to the national states, and will be more in accordance with the traditional concerns for democracy and self-determination that have formed part of the best traditions in European history.
Well, this is certainly an historical moment, and it's up to the people of Ireland to make their voice heard once again across Europe. So, Professor Coughlan, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you indeed.